So tonight, it's already the last evening talk. Tomorrow the retreat will end after lunch. And so with this talk, I want to address the topic of how we can continue to practice in our day-to-day life. How can we incorporate the practice into our life? Or how can we live life so that it becomes our practice, our spiritual practice? But first of all, let's go to Burma. In Upper Burma, near the town of Mandalay, which is the second biggest town in Burma, there is a very famous and well-known monastery. It's called the Mahagandayon Monastery. And it is famous and well-known for its good teachings, its learning monastery, meaning a place where hundreds of monks learn the Buddhist scriptures. And it has been established by a monk, by a Sayadaw called Mahagandayon Sayadaw, who lived from 1900 to 1977. And he himself had been a very learned monk, a scholar monk, but he had also engaged in meditation practice. So he had also this base of really putting the Buddha's teaching into practice. So this monastery had become very famous and well known because the quality of the teachings was very high. And so to pass through all the levels and pass the exams there was something that many monks aspire to. But it was also famous for its strict discipline. Nuns and monks, they have to follow some rules, some guidelines. And so in this monastery, the guidelines for the monks, they had to be kept quite strictly. And not enough by that. This Sayadaw, this abbot, put up a list with 10 points which the monks also had to follow or should take to heart. And the first point of this list was to have a good heart. And other points included to keep the rooms clean, to keep the robes, the clothes clean, to keep the environment, the monastery clean. And only the last and tenth point was to study well. And we should remember, it was a study monastery where the focus was on learning and studying the scriptures. I had visited this monastery a number of times, and one of my Burmese teachers, he had studied there under this abbot. And I think it's quite interesting to see or to know that this abbot laid so much stress on having a good heart and making it the most important point of his list, giving it more priority than to pass all the exams well. Because just the theoretical knowledge of the scriptures, memorizing them, learning them by heart, does not guarantee that that your behavior becomes transformed. So really, to have a good heart is so important. One time, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, the head of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, was asked what his religion, Buddhism, was all about. And instead of giving a long and detailed answer, that this was probably the person who asked the question expected, he simply said, "My religion is kindness." So to be kind, to be friendly, to be kind to yourself, to oneself, to be kind to others, that's the cause for happiness and peace in us, around us, in the world, cause for happiness now and in the future. Also, the Buddha spoke many times when he addressed groups of people about cultivating that which is helpful, which is good, or in other words, to cultivate a good heart, to cultivate that which is good, beneficial, and helpful. The Dhammapada is a collection of short sayings of the Buddha. They are in the form of verses. And there we have the verse which is like the summary of the Buddha's teaching. So it says, to cultivate good, to avoid all evil, to purify the heart and mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. To do good, to cultivate the good, to avoid evil, or what is not good, what is bad, to purify one's heart and mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. And so in this talk, I want to address the first line, right? To do good, to cultivate that which is good. So how can we do that? And especially, how can we do that in our ordinary day-to-day life? Without having to sit on our meditation cushion, without having to go to a weekly meditation group, or without having to go to a meditation retreat, like this one. But first of all, let's become clear about one word, a word that we use a lot. It's the word meditation. Here we are meditating. I think you all agree. Well, especially in here, in the meditation hall, practicing sitting meditation. Doing walking meditation outside of the meditation hall, is that still real meditation for you? Or is it kind of getting some relief and relax from the sitting so that you can do better sitting meditation? And what about being in the dining hall, eating your food? Would you usually call that eating meditation? So, what we call meditation in the Buddhist context goes back to the word bhavana, another word from the Pali language. And bhavana can be translated as cultivation, development, causing something to be. And so it's the cultivation of wholesome states of mind, the cultivation of understanding, wisdom, cultivation of metta, loving kindness, friendliness, and so on. And so when we see the word meditation in this light, that it is about the cultivation of wholesome states of mind, heart, the cultivation of understanding and wisdom leading to liberation, then meditation is not limited to so-called formal sitting meditation, which you do maybe at home on your cushion, on a chair, or in a retreat. But meditation becomes something that can be practiced in other places, basically anytime, anywhere. So as I said, we want to look at ways of how we can cultivate the good, that which is wholesome, supportive, beneficial for us and others. And as we have come to see through the practice, basically, yes, we would like to do that. We want to incline the mind towards that. But there are tendencies in us which pull us the other way. Negative thought patterns, negative inclinations, which are so strongly embedded that we fall back to them again and again. And so our reactions, whether wholesome and beneficial or unwholesome, harmful, creating suffering, they have been conditioned for a long time. Because you fall into these reactions again and again, so it becomes a strong conditioning. And so trying to cultivate good, wholesome, supportive reactions, states of mind, means making this conditioning stronger. And at the same time, with that, we try to weaken the unwholesome, negative conditioning. And so in a way, we can see the practice of meditation in the wide perspective as a practice of deconditioning the unskillful, harmful patterns, and of strengthen and kind of like creating a wholesome conditioning for the good and what is helpful and beneficial. And so to do good, to cultivate the good, we need to take care of that, or we need to nurture that. And we all take care of various things in our lives. And something we take care of is our body. We feed it, we wash it, we take it out for walks, and so on. Or we brush the teeth, we comb the hair. So we take care of our body every day. But when we look at the heart and the mind, do we take care of our heart and mind every day? Do we nurture it with good food? Do we wash it? Do we clean the heart and mind? Clean away the stains, the dirt, the dust in it. Unfortunately, not many people take care of their heart and mind regularly. on a daily basis in the same way they take care of their bodies. And many people do it out of ignorance, because somehow they have no clue that they could take care of the heart and mind and improve the condition in there. They think, oh well, I was born with all these character traits, I just have to live with them, what can I do about it? So they think, well, since I'm little I have been impatient, so what can I do? I just have to accept it. Or, as far as I can remember, I have always been kind of an aversive person and reacted in that way, and I have to put up with that. So we hear people saying these kinds of things. But I think it's quite interesting, we don't hear people say, ah, my hair is so greasy and oily, what can I do about it? Well, I just put up with it for the rest of my life, you know. Or being hungry. Oh well, I'm hungry. Oh well, you know, that's the way it is. We see, you all understand, huh? So, we do something about our greasy and oily hair, don't we? So, as I said, we wash our hair, we brush our teeth, we take showers, we take the body out for walks or to the gym or for a massage, we go to the toilet. So people take more or less care of their bodies. Some people spend much more time and energy and money on taking care of their bodies. Other people, they kind of give a very basic maintenance service to the body. But, you know, to take care of the body, that's already a good start. We should understand that, you know, to live a decent life, we need to take care of our body. Feed it properly, clean it, keep it more or less healthy. That's important. So it doesn't mean we should kind of neglect this body. Not at all. But we should not become obsessive in regard to our body. Obsessive to how our body should look like, to fit ideals, like to be very slim. Because 100 years ago, 200 years ago, if you were very slim, you know, you would be ugly. At that time, to have some volume was considered beautiful. So find a balance. And also come to an understanding of, yeah, what this body is all about, to see it in terms of, yeah, its function and how we can make good use of it to live this life, to do good things with our life, to do good things in the world. We need to have a healthy, functioning body. But the body should not be the only thing we take care of every day. So we should also take care and nurture our heart and mind. Would be best to do it also on a regular basis, on a daily faces. And so, as I've said, with this talk, I want to address some areas with which we can do good, in which we can cultivate the heart and the mind, areas in which we can put the teachings into practice. And so what I'm going to mention is, you know, just a few things. There would be much more to say, but that would need much more time. Otherwise, we would still be sitting here at midnight and have not yet finished to go through everything. So one area in which we can really do good and cultivate the good in our day-to-day life is the area of practicing generosity. The Pali word for generosity is dana, to practice dana. So it's that quality of the heart to give, to share, to support others with material things, with care, with love, with support. So practicing dana comes from the heart because we want to give, we want to share something for the help, for the welfare of the other person or the other being or for the world. And this quality of being generous is one of the most basic human qualities. And the Buddha very often stressed this quality when he was talking to people. And as we know, it's not the quality that Buddhism kind of owns and is unique to the Buddhist teachings. Across all the religions, across all the spiritual traditions in the world, this quality of generosity, of giving, of sharing, of supporting is a very basic human quality that is very much treasured and valued. In the context of the Buddha's teaching, it plays a very important role, as with the practice of generosity, we learn to let go, to give something away, and also we learn to see that we are not alone in this world, or that we are very much dependent on other people, on other beings. And so, with the practice of giving, you know, we give it to somebody, to another being, and so with that, we establish a connection to that person or the animal, whatever. So, connections are established. And as I said, it's the first step to learn to let go and to see that letting go is something that can bring joy, happiness. You know, it brings happiness for us as we can let go of something instead of holding on and clutching to things. And it brings joy to the recipient, getting something that the person or the being can use, is helpful, is for their welfare and happiness. Ajahn Chah, this great Thai meditation master that Patricia has already mentioned a couple of times in her talks, he has said, if you let go a little bit, you will get a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will get a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will get complete peace. And so this practice of letting go, you know, it starts on an outer, on a material level, but you know, as you have come to see in this practice of purifying the heart and mind, it's also about letting go negative thought patterns, unskillful behavior, letting go of wrong ideas, of wrong concepts. And it's easier to let go of things, material things, to let go of ideas and daily hold opinions, or let go of deeply rooted reactions which are not skillful, that's already a bit more difficult. And so with the practice of generosity, you learn this attitude of letting go, you know, opening a closed fist. As I said, the Buddha talked many times about the value of practicing generosity. And at one time, he said to one of his disciples, if we would understand the value and the effect of giving, we would not let pass one day without giving something to another being. So, what we give, what we share, that's of secondary importance. The important thing is to give, to share, to be generous. Except we should give and share what is for the welfare and happiness of the other being. So to give something which is harmful, detrimental, which will cause suffering, this is not skillful giving. And when we give, we should give freely, without expecting anything in return. It's not that I give you something, but then I hope you give me also something, and hopefully something even better. This practice of practicing generosity, I really came to understand it much deeper when I was in Burma. I lived in a monastery meditation center in Burma for many, many years. And there I could see how generous the Burmese people in general were. And you might know that Burma is not considered to be a rich country. Average people are quite poor. It's considered one of the poorest countries in the world. This might be true on a financial or material level, but you know, in terms of people being generous, it's a very rich country. And actually, there have been studies, you know, to kind of measure how generous people are in their countries, always in relation to how much they have or earn, and there Burma was on the top of the list. Burmese people are the most generous people in the world. And I can tell you, that's also my experience. And so when I discovered how Burmese people are generous, I became almost ashamed. Coming from a rich, affluent European country, from Switzerland. I was not growing up in a rich family and I was not really rich, but compared to Burmese people, yeah, I was quite rich. And so then I realized that I really have never the same inclination to be generous as I saw in many, many Burmese people. And so I learned a lot in regard to being generous from the so-called poor Burmese people. Just one little example. In 2008, Cyclone Nargis hit Burma and more than 150,000 people were killed and many people were injured and lost their homes, whole villages were destroyed. So it, many people suffered greatly and the Burmese government not really setting up help for the people. To make a whole story very short, together with some friends we collected dana, donations from people who were concerned about the people in Burma. I brought it to Burma and we organized like the people in the surrounding of the monastery where I was living so many years. So we organized distribution of rice and oil, the very basic staple what the Burmese people live with. Because in that area people were quite poor and if they have work, they work for a day, they get 2,000 chat, and with that they can buy some rice and some oil and then they feed their family. But they have no savings and they have no great stocks of food at home. And so not being able to work and, you know, getting no money and rice was getting scarce and so the prices were raising. So we distributed bags of rice, bottles of oil to 1,200 families in the area. And you must understand that in Burma, the monks that take the alms bowl and after breakfast they go out, walk along the streets. And people come out of the houses and put food into the alms bowl, mostly rice, and those who can afford maybe some vegetables, those who can afford some meat or some sweets, whatever. And at that time, one foreigner who had ordained as a monk, he would go out with the Burmese monks on this alms round, and he said, right after Nargis had stuck, they got noticeably less rice and food because people had none themselves. And he had noticed one elderly woman who would always come out of their house, have a little bowl and scoop a little bit of rice into the monk's bowl. And after Nargis, she still would come out and just stand there with her hands in Anjali, indicating, sorry, I have nothing to give. And then after we had distributed these bags of rice and oil to these families there, the monk said, then the following day, more people with both bowls of rice standing at the road and giving them the monks. And also this elderly lady was there again with her little ball of rice and scooping a bit into the monks' alms bowl. And he said for him it was so touching to see that, you know, it's almost like this innate quality of wanting to give, of wanting to share. And when she could do it again, she was so happy. She did it with a happy, you know, the face one could see. There was so much joy that she could give. And, you know, from a Western point of view, people would think or say, but, you know, they should have kept the rice for themselves. Because, you know, if they give, then it lasts much less long than if they would all keep it for themselves. But in Burma, this way of thinking simply does not happen. You know, it's like all Burmese people, they imbue this quality of giving by sucking their mother's milk. It's so, something so important to them and something they really practice on an everyday level that you simply cannot prevent people from giving. But, you know, it's not only in Burma that people are so generous. All over the world you find generous people. And when I was backpacking and being in Australia, a friend took me to Canberra, the capital, and we walked around in the pedestrian zone of it on a Friday afternoon around 4 o'clock. And as we walked, we saw an elderly woman. She had a little push cart and a big pot, and we saw that she had little bowls and she scooped soup and gave it to people just walking past. And as we came near, she also made a few steps towards us and offered us a bowl of soup. And so we took it, started to eat it, and it was a lovely homemade vegetable soup, apparently made with a lot of love and care. And then I started to look around to see for which organization she would distribute this soup. But I didn't find a sign, a clue, and so I went up to her to ask her. And then she said, oh no, I'm not doing it for an organization. This is my personal dana, personal offering to anybody who walks by. And she continued to say that she was living on the social welfare of Australia, the government, and that after paying her rent and insurance and food every month, she would put aside the money that was left. And she said, with kind of a twinkle in her eyes, you know, with the money that remains, I don't need to go and buy makeup or nice dresses like the other women do. I'm much happier to take this money, make this big pot of soup, and distribute it to anybody who walks by. And with that, she turned around, took another bowl, filled it, and gave it to the next person. So, this is the practice of generosity that can be practiced in our day-to-day life. So we can give material things, we can give care, we can give love, we can give time, we can share our skills, whatever. And by doing it, we come to see how joyous it is to give. And to understand that by giving, we are not getting poorer, we are not losing something, but actually we are receiving. We get so much richer by giving. And because that's a natural law, you know, whatever you give, it comes back to you in one way or another. And most of the time, it comes back to you in multiple times or amounts that you give. Sometimes in very unexpected ways. Another area where we can practice in day-to-day life is how we behave with others, how we behave in the world, like how we use our actions of body and speech to relate to others, to do things in the world. So that's the area of sila, or ethical conduct, or virtue. So basically, to use our actions of body and speech, again, to help support others, not to create suffering, not to inflict harm and injuries. And again, this is an area that we can find in other religions, in other spiritual traditions. We have certain guidelines which point out actions which are harmful or create suffering, and so saying that it would be good to avoid this kind of actions. And in the Buddhist tradition, we have kind of five basic guidelines which point out behavior that is virtuous. And they are formulated as, like, I undertake the training to refrain from killing, harming living beings. So it said what we should refrain from. That's the explicit way of expressing it, but implicitly it says, you know, we protect every form of life. We should protect living beings from sufferings inflicted on their bodies. And so, these guidelines, they also base on common sense, or we can say, the way I want to be treated, I should treat other people, other beings. So, if I do not want to be killed or harmed by others, then I should not kill and harm other living beings. In the same way, I do not want that others take my property, what belongs to me, that they steal what is mine. I should not take what belongs to others. I should not take what is not freely given to me. In the same way that I value my relationship with others, also intimate relationship in a marriage or partners, so I should not engage in any sexual misconduct which will lead to suffering, to emotional hurt. In the same way that I don't want that other people tell lies or backbite, use slanderous speech or harsh speech, I should not tell lies. I should tell what is true. I should not create disharmony with my speech, backbiting or slandering or using harsh and abusive language. So these four guidelines really point out where we can avoid a lot of harm and suffering, and in this way, where we can contribute a lot to others' happiness, peace, and harmony. And then the fifth guideline says to refrain from taking intoxicants that cloud the mind, cause the heedlessness, meaning things like alcohol or drugs. So when we really want to come to a deeper understanding of reality, to see more clearly what is, we need a clear mind. And if we use substances which cloud the mind, which make it heedless, then it's more difficult to pursue its aims. And also, by using substances which cloud the mind and maybe losing our inhibitions, then we more easily can transgress any of the other guidelines and harm, inflict injuries on others, or we tell a lie, what is not true. So this area of sila, of virtuous conduct of body and speech, is a big field of practice, because in our day-to-day life we do things, we say things all the time. We cannot avoid that. And so we can transform this and make it our practice. That's where really our life is, the practice. We need to incline the mind towards virtuous conduct. We need some presence of mind to know what we do or what we say, or to know our emotions, our state of mind, which maybe wants to say something harsh or untrue. But then you can reflect, oh no, maybe that's not so good. As you see, much more could be said to this field of practice in day-to-day life. But I want to address another area, and that's the area of like what we call meditation. And as I said, bhavana, you know, meditation, the cultivation of skillful, beneficial states of mind, which lead to understanding and wisdom. So this can also be done in day-to-day life. You know, here we have been practicing vipassana meditation, we have been practicing metta meditation, and we also can practice them in our day-to-day life. And so especially with this area, we see that meditation is not dependent on a certain posture or a certain location, meditation center, but that meditation is much more an attitude of how I want to go through life. Do I want to use this precious human life to come to a deeper understanding of reality? So I want to use it to cultivate the good, wholesome, positive qualities in heart and mind. So I want to use it to act and speak in a way that is not harmful, but that is supporting. And so when we see meditation as this attitude, then even practicing vipassana meditation or metta meditation in day-to-day life is not so difficult anymore. So in regard to the vipassana approach, as you have come to understand, mindfulness, awareness is one of the basic qualities we need to be present, to be aware of what is happening in our body or in our mind, what we perceive through the senses, whether hearing takes place or whether there is anger coming up, whether there is pain. So we need that. And you know, we also can become aware of the body when we queue up in the supermarket. Like the other day when we had to wait for lunch, we were standing there, you know, in a queue. And so, in the same way, when you queue up at the supermarket, practice standing meditation. Or be aware of your breath. Be aware of the touch of the feet on the ground. When you make a step forward, be aware of that step. Or waiting in the doctor's office until it's your turn. You can sit there on the chair and notice your nervousness or the pain that you have in the body. Or if there is a situation like that, you can have a meal in silence and being aware of the eating process. If you're not somewhere eating together with somebody else at home or in a restaurant, you can be aware when you take a shower or when you brush your teeth, when you put on your coat, when you walk up the stairs to your office, or when you are stuck in front of a red light, sitting in your car or on your bicycle. You can have a few moments, a minute or 3 minutes of coming into your body. Feel the touching or feel the impatience. Of course, you can also be aware of your thoughts, your emotions, you know, anxiety that comes up, the impatience that comes up, or the joy that is there. Or you can be aware of the Vedana. Is this a pleasant experience, or is it unpleasant? Is it neither? Is it neutral? So any aspect that we notice here in the formal meditation, we can have moments, a few minutes of that in our day-to-day life. So it's not so difficult. The only difficulty is to remember doing it. And if you do it here, a few moments here, a couple of minutes there, again a minute, if you add it up, makes quite a bit of time every day. There, yes, you have really practiced being mindful. Or in all these different situations in your day-to-day life, you could practice metta meditation. So while queuing up in the grocery store or waiting at the doctor's office, you can cultivate metta, be it for yourself, be it for the people in front of you in the queue, be it for the person at the checkout counter, or for your family, or for your friends, or when you go to work, sitting in the bus or the train, metta for the people at work, or the teacher, or the students, or when you're cooking. You can cultivate metta by chopping the vegetables, stirring in the pot, and so on. Again, plenty of opportunities to cultivate loving kindness in your day-to-day life. Just remember to do it. So there would be much more to say and also much more practical hints of how to practice, but this must be enough for now, and it should give you an idea of how you can really incorporate it in your day-to-day life. And be creative, you know, find your own ways of implementing it into your day-to-day life. But make it a joyful affair. Don't make it another duty that you have to do, you know, with a grim face and yes, I need to do it. No. Play with it. Make it joyful. And if it's a joy to do, you will continue to do it. If it's a stern duty, then after a short time, you will stop doing it. So you see, our life is a practice, and we can incorporate all the different aspects into our day-to-day life, practice them in our ordinary lives. And so in this way, it helps deepen our practice, it widens our practice, and it helps to cultivate the good. And it helps to have a good heart, to manifest the good heart. I want to close with a few words of a Tibetan Buddhist teacher, and somebody did an interview with him, asked him many, many questions, and then at the end the person said, well, Rinpoche, thank you very much for the time you have given me to ask you all these questions. Would you like to add something else, something important to you? And this Rinpoche said, yes, there is one thing. Try to have a good heart at all times in every situation. Let's sit quietly for a few moments.